Dear shooter, a new old trend is on the rise. Hunters are increasingly turning to big bore calibers instead of that tried and true flat shooting distance calibers. Is this just a revenge of the FUDs, or is there something more to it?
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just
it's
made
a
that
clip
weird.
On, it's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Happy Thursday from the middle of Wyoming, which actually I think is the middle of the apocalypse now, because what are we looking at? About a third of the state's on fire?
It's smoky.
It is smoky.
I don't even know what we're up to now. What, 200,000 acres?
Oh, at the very least, there's a lot of new ones up, and I'm not sure of acreage and containment yet.
The Red Canyon one out by Lysite, that's 125,000 acres.
Yeah.
I mean, they've almost got it contained.
Damn good thing, because there's a gas plant out there.
That's right.
More than one. Pipeline's running.
Right. I'm pretty sure we would see that explosion from here.
It'd be exciting for a minute.
It's going to rearrange all the pictures on my wall.
Well, and the thing about it is it's kind of spooky, because we're looking at that like that's our antelope hunt area for our veterans hunt.
Well, the fire hasn't come down that far yet, but the poor people who have elk tags, that's all charred.
It'll be a thing.
Or the elk will just be in one little spot.
The only place left with trees?
That's right.
They'll be grocery shopping.
It kind of makes you wonder, because that's going to be a challenge this year between the resident hunters and the outfitters. I mean, it's crazy in that area already.
It's very crazy in that area.
And now you're going to have, because of all of this fire damage, the elk, it'll be interesting to see where they go.
I'm kind of interested if there will be the outfitters, because the one outfitter land out there, they're pretty much burnt to a crisp. Buildings were lost and everything, so.
Yeah, so I know that the Lyman Ranch, which was the Mashuda place as well, they combined a couple years back. They're burnt out. They're done. And so if they plan to hunt their leased ground for the outfitter there, good luck finding an elk, because they aren't going to be there.
No.
There's no feed.
There's no feed, yeah. Nothing left. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy. And, you know, Brandy and I drove by one of the biggest fires going on in the state. That you talked about the Red Canyon fire. That started 11 miles east of Thermopolis, mm-hmm. and grew to, at one point, I heard 134,000 acres.
Yikes.
You know, we drove past that. We'd gone up to the Bighorns to camp over the weekend, and it was, you could see the smoke. Of course, since that thing started, we could see the smoke from our house, and we're, you know, 100 miles away.
Mm-hmm. I drove up there one Sunday just to kind of put eyes on it and see really what it was doing to the hunt area that I enjoy, and it was pretty catastrophic. We sat and watched the aircraft dump water and the red slurry and all the spotter planes and all the mapping planes. I mean, it was a pretty interesting coordinated effort.
Well, you said there was a couple of landowners out there. They're supposed to be evacuated. They're sitting on the hillside sleeping in a truck now watching their property.
So we drove out there and just drove to the top of a hill to take a better gander at the valley we were looking at, and ran into a couple of landowners that we work with. And these are two elderly women that have left the house and have been living in their truck for a couple days when I got there. They were just watching to see if it was going to come over the hill towards their place, and it wasn't very far. We're talking 400 yards straight over the hill as a crow flies. It was right at their doorstep. It never did come over the hill. So to my knowledge, they were able to go home. But it was sketchy and not real good there for a little while.
Well, I know in this part of the world, like, fire is probably the scariest thing that we deal with. California has the earthquakes, Florida has the hurricanes, North Carolina just suffered a hurricane. But out here in the Rocky Mountain West, it's wildfire.
Well, we don't get the tornadoes like some part of the country does. We don't get the hurricanes. We don't have enough water in the air. we don't get the earthquakes that are substantial.
So we do get earthquakes, though.
Yeah, but they're not substantial enough to cause us a problem.
Right.
I mean, you hear a little vibration, you're like, what was that? And that was what we get as earthquakes.
Right.
But blizzards, they're a thing.
Yep, blizzards, yep.
They're only dangerous if you try and go out in them. So you can wait those out, usually. But outside that, fire's pretty much the scariest thing we got going on.
Well, I think it gets so scary out here because of our wind.
The stuff that never stops.
Yeah. And when we say wind, you know, we're not talking about the 15, 20 mile an hour breeze. We're talking 80 to 100 mile an hour sustained.
You know, when they report that on the East Coast, you know, we're getting a hurricane.
It's a Category 4.
It's going to be 100 mile per hour wind. We're like, dude, that's Tuesday.
Yeah, we quite regularly have winds above 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, today there was 15 to 25, and that was a calm day.
Mm-hmm. It was calm.
I mean, don't consider that wind.
No, we don't. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, when the wind stops here, we all fall over.
Everybody comes outside because they're, like, wondering what's going on. It's like when the kids get quiet in the back of the house.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is this? What big boar do you think they're going to take antelope hunting? Because an antelope is it's about like a small whitetail. So you don't want to big boar that too much, or it's pre-processed.
Well, yeah. And this is more, what we're seeing the trend in is more the bigger game, the elk, the moose. And no, it's actually not Revenge of the Fuds this time. And I really hope that our friends over at Bishop Ammunition and Firearms are listening, because they are big boar aficionados.
They are. Big boars are different to different people. If you go by a stereotypical definition, big boar is anything over 375.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, 375s are relatively slow in the grand scheme of cartridges. That plays a whole different dynamic when you look at terminal on game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see a huge trend in ramping up the 6.5 calibers, you know, with the PRC now. It's a blazing fast cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
The term barrel burner is not lost on it.
Right.
But you see a lot of 300 Win Mags come out for antelope.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, that is a fairly heavy cartridge, overgunned, if you will, for an antelope.
It's a little big.
But if you're comfortable with it, and you shoot it well, it's damn effective.
Right.
You just got to back up.
Yeah.
A lot.
Drive away from them until you can't see them. And,
yeah. Well, I mean, and I hunt pretty much across the board, unless I'm hunting small game. My 30-06 is my go-to.
Well, and I would, in the 06, God love that caliber, but it's overkill an animal.
It's totally overkill.
But it's damn effective.
Yeah.
I use my 7mm 08 on everything out here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great cartridge because, one, you handle it really, really well. And let's all just brace reality for a second. Shot placement matters.
It's a thing.
Absolutely a thing. You don't need the big overboard 30 cal if you can put one in the right spot.
Right.
And don't take that shot you can't handle.
Right.
There's another ethics thing we need to talk about. If we're going to talk about big boar versus manageable calibers for antelope, there's a distance where you just I need to get closer.
Yeah. And before we get there, like I'm going to caveat this whole thing. Like I'm talking larger game, elk and bigger, and that's where we're seeing this trend at. And when I first saw it, I mean, yes, my initial reaction was, oh god, the FUDs are back. But the more I started looking into it, and the more I started seeing kind of the reasoning for it, the more it was like, kind of makes sense. But before we get there, let's talk about ethics.
All right. So, me.
Yeah.
That's an us me thing. So, in hunting ethics, shot placement is king. If you try and manage a shot that's outside your capabilities, out of ego or you're rushing the shot, you're going to screw things up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fair to the animal. Don't do that.
Right.
If you're taking too light of a caliber for the quarry you're going after, that's an unethical thing as well. Don't do that.
Right.
I've known a lot of guys over the years that have taken elk with a 243. It's shot placement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fast 6mm pill. It is. It's not necessarily enough poop, knockdown power, however you measure it, for that bigger game.
Mm-hmm.
Antelope, it's excellent for.
Antelope, deer?
Deer. Even in some of the western country we hunt in, it's light on some of our big mule deer.
Yeah. The whitetails are fine.
It's perfect for it. I equate our antelope to a large whitetail. They're thin-skinned.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty light body. You can get away with more of a laser beam, smaller caliber.
Right. As long as you've got your shot placement.
That's correct.
And I think that's one of the big things. One of the things I push when I'm teaching the hunting classes, when I'm teaching the long range classes, you need to know, number one, what your firearm's capable of and what you're capable of with it. And I always teach this, and I know I've said this before. When my hunters come to my long range class, which we go out, 1,500, 2,000 yards in that class, just so that people understand their capability. But I tell them up front, while a 800,000 yard shot is not ethical, but in any stretch of the imagination, you should be capable of it.
Well,
because there may be a circumstance where you have to take that shot.
And I agree with that to an extent. What are you doing? If you're shooting and putting placement on steel or paper.
Well, exactly.
Sling the lead. Do your thing.
Exactly.
Right? Learn your equipment. Have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to take a life to feed your family, that's not fair.
No.
Don't do that.
No, it's not. But, and I always push the capability of it. You need to be far more precise as a hunter than you ever do as a competition shooter.
We have to be more observant.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you make a shot, you're managing time, right? The projectile has a specific velocity, a specific curve. You're managing time. The further away it is, the more time you have to manage. That's not in your favor.
No.
That animal can take a step. It can quarter away from you. And a lot can happen in a second flight path that we're talking then at that 800,000-yard mark
mm-hmm.
to screw up that shot and then cause a really bad situation on the game.
Well, and that's why I push the capability of it. I've been in this situation where, I had a hunter wound an animal, and this thing broadsided at 860 yards, and now, I've got a wounded elk skylined at almost pushing 900 yards, and had this elk gone over the hill, we were in trouble.
We may have not recovered that elk.
Right. Now, what's more ethical, let it go or attempt it?
I think in that case, you had to attempt it because it was you.
Right.
Had it been the hunter that can't make a 400-yard shot and now it's double that distance,
mm-hmm.
I'd say no.
Right.
Because the chances are you're going to make it worse.
Right.
Or higher. But it's you. You practice this stuff. Mm. You've sent that shot before. You know your rifle. And in a pinch, you could handle that shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, back to that hunter's capability.
Right.
That's where ethics start to blur.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between a guy that shoots 2 or 3 rounds to zero his gun, then goes hunting, and a guy that shoots 2 or 3,000 rounds throughout the season and then goes hunting. Those are two different guys.
Right.
Same gun, maybe, but two different guys.
But that's why, I make the distinction that while it may not be ethical, you should be capable. Because there is certain circumstances where a shot that wouldn't normally be ethical is warranted.
That's the unpredicting nature of hunting, though.
Right.
And you're absolutely right about being prepared and trained and being able to. You should be able to. However,
yeah,
these are very rare circumstances, and I would not condone it on a regular basis.
No, I don't either. I you know, I like to take my elk at like 200. It's just a much easier shot because they're a big target.
Well, and it's about hunting, right? What you did on that elk to save that disabled vet from having a really bad experience was a shooting display. That was not hunting.
No.
Not by any stretch. And you want to get down to it. You start looking at statistics of how we evolve as hunters. You're given a rifle, and you hunt that way for a long, long time.
Uh-huh.
And then you look for something that has more of a challenge to it. Makes it more fair chase. You pick up a bow and arrow. That's the evolution of a hunter. We don't hardly ever go from bow and arrow to rifle. That's a very unnatural progression.
Only if you miss during bow and arrow season.
Okay, she got you there.
No, but if you look at how people choose to hunt,
yeah,
right? The progression there is they look for more challenges, right? I know guys that are proficient with a rifle, they're proficient with a bow, and now they're seeking out states and quarry that have atlatl seasons. You talk about a challenge.
Yeah.
You got to get close, and it's about hunting. You got to be able to stalk in, use the wind, manage your own scent, maybe track, understand where that animal is in a forested environment. That's hunting. And so when you talk about ethical rifle shots, it's more than just a caliber.
Right.
It's about hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the ethics of during bow season, you can shoot a crossbow. Basically, you're shooting a rifle with an arrow coming out of it.
Yeah, most states
do
allow that.
I don't think that should be done at rifle season.
I can't say I disagree. I'm not a crossbow fan. My mindset is if you're going to pull a trigger and shoulder it, shoot a rifle.
Agreed.
You still have to get close with a crossbow. It's still a hunt. But they blur a line for me that I'm personally not willing to cross.
Well, and I would argue that a follow-up shot with a crossbow is much slower than one with a compound bow.
Incredibly slower. Have you ever tried to reload a crossbow?
Oh, my God. They're a pain in the butt.
No, but I've seen it, and I'm like, and the animal is gone.
Like, he's in the next county by the time you get another bolt in there.
There's no way to effectively do that really, really well.
No.
Technology is increasing, and people are managing that better now than they ever have, but it's still not.
Yeah, but still, most crossbows that I've seen, it's some kind of there's an extra device that uses mechanical advantage to cock the thing, and I mean it's just, and it's a whole ordeal. I mean, you might as well at that point go muzzle loader.
Totally no tack reload with that one.
No, no, not at all.
And there are muzzle loader seasons. I know guys that seek that out as well.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
there's
another
no challenge.
Level of difficulty when it comes to big game hunting.
Right, which brings us around to the whole big bore thing.
Correct.
So what the trend is guys are starting to go more big bore. So they're going their 460s, 375s, 475s, 500s. And to your point earlier, it does become more of a hunt because you do have to get closer with those calibers. Most of those guns, at best, they're a 300-yard gun.
Well, I'm saying you don't need that kind of firepower for most animals in the United States, and they're just compensating for something?
No. And okay, fine. Some might. But here's the justification that I'm starting to see. They're looking at it because it is more of a challenge because, yes, you're throwing a lead softball, but you got to be a lot closer, typically within 150 yards or closer, to get an ethical shot with a big bore like that. Because they don't have the velocities to carry. The other reason that they're carrying them is we are seeing, especially in the western United States, an explosion of grizzly bears. So they're looking at a caliber that they can both hunt with, but is also effective for a self-defense.
And it's an interesting dynamic. I have gone into bear country, and usually my defensive gun is an 870 shotgun,
mm-hmm.
buckshot or slugs. Biggest pellet I can find, the better. And I agree with that mindset with a big predator,
mm-hmm.
by far. But hunting, you don't need it. If you're using one gun to solve it all, that's fine. Well, I'm seeing it in a lot of ways of states where they require a straight wall cartridge.
That too, yep.
What's interesting is these states that have the straight wall rules have a lot of vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
They're not shooting 50 to 100 yards typically because they're shooting out of a stand somewhere or a blind somewhere.
No, and a lot of these states won't allow like the 6.5 Creedmoors or the 308s or the 30-06 because they don't want the hunters to have that kind of distance.
Well, and that's probably a fair statement. However, it's very ignorant.
It is.
In the way that they're forced to hunt.
Right.
Most of them in a tree stand, right? So they're shooting down at the quarry.
Mm-hmm.
The likelihood of an errant shot is pretty rare. But straight wall cartridges was an attempt to limit, yes, carryover.
Right.
End of the day, you had the, 44, 357.
Mm-hmm.
And they barely hit the power factor enough to be legal for hunting.
Right.
Enter the 350 Legend.
Oh, one of my favorites.
The 450 Bushmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Those were big bore solutions to a straight wall cartridge requirement by their state. So we see it bleed over from that, too. Gun manufacturers and ammo manufacturers are selling and hyping these things because, well, they don't sell enough of them in the regular market. They got to make it cool to shoot, right? So at the end of the day, where are you hunting? What are you hunting?
Most people aren't hunting grizzly bears.
Well, you can't.
I'm going to treat a grizzly bear a lot like they tell you to treat a wolverine. If it comes and lays claim to your elk or whatever you brought down, you go, good day, sir, and you let him have it.
And that's how the law reads. You have to have physical harm presented to you, the threat thereof, before you can engage a grizzly. So if you do shoot a grizzly for whatever reason,
you better have some battle scars.
you don't have to necessarily have scars, but you had better shoot it in the face, in the front. If you shoot it in the ass as it's running away, you're going to jail.
And not with a rifle with a scope.
Correct.
Just saying.
Yeah, you were in trouble.
Well, we'll address this here in a second.
If you haven't tried 10th Mountain Whiskey, can you even call yourself a shooter? Okay, Mr. AK guy that only drinks vodka. 10th Mountain has that too. Still too much? Maybe that cordial would suit your unrefined palate. But for you real pipe hitters out there, the single malt can't be beat. Whiskey is an acquired taste. And if you don't like whiskey, I suggest you acquire some taste. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. It's whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
All right. I'm going to preface this by saying you are absolutely 100% correct that self-defense against a bear, a mountain lion, whatever predator you might be dealing with, is no different than self-defense against a human. You've got to present with a lethal threat, an immediate lethal threat. However, we've seen this in Africa. How fast do those Cape buffalo come out of nowhere?
It's light speed.
And it's no different with a bear.
Agreed.
If you're walking through dense timber and all of a sudden you round a corner and there is a grizzly bear 5 feet in front of you and not happy, you're in a self-defense situation right now.
You are.
And in an animal that size, I mean, Africa requires what? 4.75 minimum?
3.75 minimum and 2 PHs.
Yeah. So you've got a 3.75 minimum caliber and 200, two other professional hunters backing you up.
Correct.
Because this is dangerous game.
That's right.
In North America, grizzly bears no different.
Well, I mean, I clarify a couple details here. Grizzly bears are protected Mountain lions are not.
Well, yeah. Right?
Cape buffalo are not necessarily protected. You encounter a bear that takes interest in you. Grizzly bears are notorious for false charge. So you better be prepared to clean your shorts out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you choose to defend yourself with a firearm, you had better shoot it in the front.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because if you shoot one in the ass running away, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Shoot a mountain lion in the ass going away, you can go down to the store, buy a tag, you're probably going to be fine.
No, you're absolutely right. And that, well, and to be fair, like, it's one of the things I will commend, I guess, who it would be, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. The protection efforts and the repopulation efforts that have gone on with the grizzly bear have been phenomenal, to the point that they're trying to delist them and put them as trophy game because we got too many now.
We've been through this evolution before, and it's all politics.
It is.
Some judge back east puts an injunction on it, and you're done. I actually had a grizzly bear tag in my pocket in 2013, 2012, when they delisted them the first time. And gassing up my truck to go, came across the wire. They've been listed again, so don't go.
Why is it that a judge on the eastern side of the United States can determine what is correct for Wyoming?
Because they allowed it.
No, it's a federal Endangered Species Protection Act. It's
yeah,
not a Wyoming one.
Do they have grizzlies out there on the East Coast?
They well, not.
They do that, not, so they can shove it up their bunghole.
And you're exactly right. And the Supreme Court actually just heard those arguments because of all of these judges that were slapping injunctions on things that Trump was trying to do. And the Supreme Court has finally come down and said, look, you circuit court judges, you district court judges, you don't have authority over the entire freaking country. You don't get to issue injunctions 8 states away.
And they haven't figured out how to write the legislation yet, because it is a federally protected animal, right? Now, they have an exception because Alaska calls it a brown bear.
Right.
It's a grizzly.
Oh, it is.
Okay, but so you can't tell me they don't have a federal judge in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Oh, they do.
So if he goes, hey, you know, we probably shouldn't quite yet. I can see where it might be a problem for some, but not quite yet. We'd have more respect for that person because they freaking live here.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would totally
and
agree.
And they know what a grizzly bear looks like. I'm not sure the East Coast dude knows what a grizzly bear even fucking looks like.
No.
Same thing with the wolves, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, the wolves.
We need to round up a bunch of bears and round up a bunch of wolves, and then we take them to Central Park and drop them off.
Agreed.
They will identify them real quick.
And then they'll know what mm-hmm. problems mm-hmm. it could be.
That's right. Then at least there'll be merit to the decisions and things they talk about.
Yeah. Well, and I'm all in favor of, you know, they're talking about moving the Department of Agriculture out to Denver.
Because Denver has so much corn in this.
Well,
cement
the
city.
Thing about it is it puts them in a more in a more practical location. People in D.C. they've never set foot in a freaking cornfield. They have no idea what they're regulating.
I don't know if Denver's the right place, though. I mean, a lot of our agricultural ground is in the Midwest.
Agreed. I think it'd be better like in Kansas City.
I agree with you. But wherever they move it, it'll be interesting to see how that goes because policies are going to shift. Because the mindset is different from out east versus here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we shouldn't be able to tell the East Coast people whatever animal they're having problems with. We shouldn't be able to say, no, we've never seen one of those, so don't shoot it.
So, okay, so maybe we need to get our federal judge in Cheyenne to issue an injunction for Florida and say they can't shoot the iguanas anymore.
He'd be laughed out of his office.
Exactly.
It would never happen.
So why... Yeah, exactly. So to your point, like why can they do it to us all the freaking time?
It's a federally protected animal. And that's the only reason they have jurisdiction.
But they have federal judges mm-hmm. in many, many different areas.
Agreed.
I think the federal judge in that particular area should make that particular decision. Exactly. I mean, I'm not very educated in law, but just saying.
No, well, but that just happened.
The authority on wildlife conservation in Wyoming is Wyoming Game and Fish. And these folks, they go to school for this. They're passionate about it. They are conservationists to their core. Some of them are a little bit nutty, but for the most part, they're good people. And if the feds would just recognize that the Wyoming Game and Fish can manage our own, we'd be better off.
Yeah. Well, and I think that goes for most states. And I always use the example of the EPA versus the state DEQ. It's they perform the exact same function, but the federal EPA will come in and try and override the state DEQ, and the poor landscaper that's trying to do the erosion control is caught in the middle.
That's right.
Because the EPA is telling them one thing and the state's telling them another. You know, the people that are the state, they know it because they live here. They understand it.
They should know it.
Yeah.
I have known people who work there, and I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in them.
You know, that's one thing I've always railed against is federal agencies that are redundant to state agencies. I think the state agencies are far more equipped to handle the issues.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's like we're not going to be able to handle somebody's earthquake. We don't know what we're doing.
Right.
Fair enough. And one of the things that bring this kind of conversation back 360 is recently we saw the Wyoming legislator try to figure out how to regulate how far is too far for an ethical shot.
I do remember this.
It didn't go really anywhere, and it might get talked about at session here coming up, but that is a completely bogus mindset. While I do believe that there are unethical shots out there, I think that's shooter-dependent.
It is shooter-dependent.
The equipment's getting better, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's becoming more available to shoot further than we've ever had before. But to have the lawmakers make a stance is dumb.
Well, it's dumb, and it's just everything, and we talked about this earlier, every shot you take on a hunt is extremely circumstantial.
Agreed.
The conditions, the wind, the way the animal's standing, how many rounds have you put down range that year? Did your gun like the bullet you're shooting? I mean, all of these things factor in. How accurate is your ammunition? And by accurate, I mean how consistent. You know, if you, you know, for example, when I rebuilt my hunting rifle, I'm getting SDs of 8.
Yeah, and that's
and 8 feet per second, that's consistent.
That's an extremely accurate round. I will offer, though, that 95% of hunters shoot a factory round.
I shoot a factory round.
Most of the guys have shot a factory round out of the same box for the past 10 years.
Agreed.
So they're not doing hand loads. They're not measuring their SD. They're not shooting to that level.
No.
Most folks, if they can hit a pie plate at 100 yards, they think
they're happy.
Good.
Yep.
That's right. And at 100 yards, sure, they're lethal.
Mm-hmm.
At 400 yards, maybe not so much. But we live in the Western states, and 400 yards is a very common shot for us.
It is. It is.
So we expect more out of our hunters than you, say, would in Texas.
Yeah.
When you're shooting 75 yards out of a stand over a feeder.
Right.
I expect less out of that guy because he doesn't have to perform that much.
Well, and when we went to Africa, jumped in the buggy, and Brandy was with me with one of the PHs that she had met before, Ralph, and he was taking me out to go and get my Black Impala. And we spot this thing, and this thing's 400, 450 yards, something like that. And he ranged it for me and turned around and looked at me. He says, "Well, I know your wife can shoot. What can you do?" And I dropped it. And he went, "Okay. We don't have to have this conversation."
In all honesty, he's used to seeing folks that have a hard time hitting anything at 50 yards.
Right.
And it's not the equipment.
No.
Right? It's hunter.
Yeah, it's them because they've never hunted a day in their life, but that sounds like a really cool vacation.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yep.
Yep.
And it is. It's an excellent time. I highly recommend it.
But you still...
You're still responsible if you're taking a life.
If you've never shot before, let them take you 50 yards in because a lot of times they can.
Be honest. Say, I can't make that shot.
Right.
And most quality outfits will take you to the range, and they are going to gauge your ability before they put you in the hunting situation. You're not going to have that conversation in the field. They're going to know.
Right.
That's their job.
Right.
Right. And as hunting guides, it's our job as well.
Well, it is, and we do that. Like when we bring in all our hunters for the antelope hunt, the first thing we do day one is we take them to the range, put them on a 100-yard piece of paper, and see what they can do.
Right.
Because then we kind of have an idea of what we can expect in the field.
That's right. I have had for 2 years in a row. I've had a guy that, you know, he's pretty good at 100, but he's running that 2.5-3 minute group.
Mm-hmm.
And you put him at 300 and 400, he's not so good.
Well, a 2.5-3 minute group at 100 yards. I mean, that's 7 inches at four.
That's right. That's a miss and a wounding of an animal.
Right.
So we get that guy closer.
Yeah.
As the guide, it's kind of our job.
Mm-hmm.
As a hunter, if you don't have a guide, that's your job.
Right. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. It's personal responsibility. And it's being responsible for making a good shot and making a clean kill.
Big bore calibers are not going to make up for sloppy mechanics.
Right.
I mean, you can throw a big heavy lead. You still got to hit.
Right. Well, and that's, I wonder if you might be right that they are compensating, thinking, well, if I hit them with this 400 grain lead softball, doesn't matter where I hit it, it's going down.
Which is not true.
That's not.
And it might go down, and it may get right back up.
Right.
Because you didn't do anything lethal.
Yeah. And that always sucks. Ask me how I know. Because if you are shooting and you hit anything behind the diaphragm, you're in for a mess.
And a long track, obviously. It can be bad.
Oh. Horrible.
So, well, and those distance shooters, just so you know, you wound that animal, but you gave that animal, it's 800 yards to start. And it takes
right.
off.
Right. Now, yeah. Now it's got a half mile head start.
That's
on
right.
you.
That's exactly right.
But going back to your point, you know, the lawmakers trying to decide what's an ethical shot. We have a friend of ours that we watched him take an antelope at a mile in front of the Game and Fish.
Well, yeah, I did have that. Yep.
But he knew, like, how many times has he made that shot?
Oh, that season,
thousands.
Probably 2,000 or 3,000 shots that day.
Yeah,
yeah. No, that was a different situation. But that was not hunting; that was shooting, and he was capable of it.
Right.
Would I condone that shot? Other than that one individual under those controlled circumstances, probably not.
Yeah, because he was sitting at a bench.
Yes, at a known distance.
Well, that's the same guy too. You know how he shoots. So he looked at the animals, kind of checked them out. Dug in his pocket, yep, I have 2 tags, and took both with 1 bullet.
I've watched him do that.
Now, he's different than a lot of hunters. Like, I couldn't do any of that. I could probably take one at a mile because I've shot the mile a million times. I wouldn't.
I don't think you ever would.
I wouldn't.
The difference between him and you is he shoots a lot more than you do, and you have that instinct of, nah, I'm not taking that shot. We can get closer because it's a hunt. It's not shooting.
Well, and I've been told I'm over ethical because I like the animals to know I'm kind of there. I want them to stand up because I want the young to pair with their mother so I know which one I'm going to shoot because I like the dry doe.
You're being observant, though. You're observing animal behavior.
And a lot
you're
of people go,
shooting.
You don't have to do that because those young are ready to be out on their own. But 1 year, we went hunting, and this guy shot a mother with twins, and those twins would not leave that body.
No, it was heartbreaking to
it
watch.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
It was an unethical shot, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And that brings you that kind of you're making a really good point though that ethics don't it's not just about the shot placement, it's taking the right animal.
Correct.
And forget about species identification, but if you're going to shoot a cow elk or a doe deer or doe antelope, make sure they don't have babies with them.
You have to watch behavior. You have to pick it out.
And that's part of hunters and fishermen and outdoor people in general, they're the greatest conservationists that we have.
Absolutely.
Because they want to preserve that, because they want to enjoy it.
I want to hand the activity down to our children.
Right.
And if we don't do it right, we'll lose it.
Right. Oh, and we kind of experienced that a little bit this weekend where we went camping, and we're spoiled because we have family that has property up in the mountains that we can go to and camp anytime, and we don't have to worry about fighting for a spot. And where we went to a place this weekend, and I mean, it took us 3.5 hours to drive there. It took us 4 hours to find a spot to park our camper because everything was full. And I don't know if you noticed, but about half of what we saw up there was out-of-state plates.
And nobody was with them. It was parked.
Yeah, they just went up there, parked it, left it.
And they're supposed to only be parked for 16 days. And they're supposed to move 2 miles from that spot as a crow flies.
Right.
There's people up there that have been up there for a month.
Well, get back to enforcement, right?
Right.
They've parked their camper. They've kind of claimed their space. And if there's no Forest Service guy going by and...
Shouldn't need that kind of enforcement. You should be the good person and do the right damn thing.
Yeah.
People are inherently lazy. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is. And they're not hunters. They're campers. Right?
I know. I think a lot of them are hunters.
Well, they're getting ready for the bow season coming up.
Yep. Because they're... We passed one, and it was clearly, actually, we passed two of them up there that were clearly outfitter camps.
Those are outfitters, but I bet you they get permitted.
They probably do.
That's a different situation.
Yeah, and it is. And the spots they were in were not spots that you would probably take a camper to. Most of those guys are running horseback.
Well, and on the other side of that, there's enough shit happening up there. I wouldn't have left my camper for a month up there.
No.
We watched how many... freaking sheriff's department and the U.S. Marshals run down that road.
Yeah, we were...
Marshals.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. We'd found a spot, and Brandy rightly said, you know, before we get all set up and everything, let's grab the Ranger, and let's go drive down a couple of these roads and see if we can't find something better. As we're doing this, roaring up this road, and this is a mountain road, like in the middle of freaking nowhere, right? We see 2 U.S. Marshals, canine units, 3 sheriff's deputies, and 2 other unmarked law enforcement vehicles.
Somebody had a grow house in the trees.
Either that, there were some reports that somebody was breaking into campers up there. Who knows?
But somebody's breaking into campers and the U.S. Marshals are involved, it's someone they were looking for to begin with.
So... Fugitive control is a marshal's thing. And your other law enforcement agencies, if it wasn't Forest Service, if it was sheriff.
It was sheriff and it was 2 other unmarked.
They are chasing down an individual.
Yep.
And somebody gave them a tip that they were hunkered down in the boonies somewhere.
Which is easy because everyone leaves their camper fucking up there with unpopulated for a month. That's all sorts of booty.
Right.
And a place to live.
And a place to live while you're doing it. I totally get it. It's just... That was a very unique situation.
It was kind of weird, though. Like, do we really want to stay here?
I don't think I've ever seen the U.S. Marshals drive around before. I was like, oh, wow, those are real. I thought they were just on TV.
I've been with the Marshal Service a few times, and they typically stick to a mission. They're in and out. They do not hang out in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Oh, they were driving like they were on a mission. They were, lie.
They were going somewhere with a purpose.
Yeah, so the Forest Service guy is the one that he's monitoring the campsites.
Right.
And there's just not enough of those guys to go around. There's really not.
So be a good person and follow the rules.
Good idea. Back to ethics.
Yeah, well, people have no ethics. I've lost my faith in humanity.
Inherently lazy. And what you consider okay, they don't because, well, it gets in the way of their plan.
Yeah. Well, you know, and for the most part, I'm to each his own, but... try to do the right thing. I don't know.
Well, I roll into my campsite after going down and getting groceries or something, and I find somebody messing with my camper. They're going to wish that they had Forest Service guy there.
Yeah.
No one else knows you're here.
Well, and that was the first thing Brandy said to me. She's like, are we okay to camp up here? And my first thought was, I dare someone to break into our camper.
We have a pit bull and several firearms to greet you with. It's all right. Yeah. Come on in.
You're in for a surprise.
Ding, ding, get in the ring.
The only crappy part was there was absolutely no cell service, so I couldn't call the marshal.
And you didn't have your backhoe with you.
No.
No, but still no one else knows he's there, and there's plenty of caves and stuff and
there
the Bighorns.
Up in the Bighorns, there's a lot of limestone. There's a lot of caves.
And people go missing all the time.
Oh, they do.
Exactly.
They absolutely do. So, wow, that went quick. So, I guess, and you guys are going to be hearing this probably on your escape for Labor Day weekend. So, we wish everyone a happy and safe Labor Day weekend. Go have fun.
Make it ethical.
Make it ethical. Make it fun.
Everybody else around you have more fun.
And I guess if you feel the need to overcompensate, blame it on your big bore.